A very quick meditation on the persistence of electronics, screens, and noise in my life, and the surprisingly rare times that they've disappeared. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Peter Healy, Daniel Boyd, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. If I start to look over the timeline of my life, it's either surprising or unsurprising exactly how little time I've spent away from technology. From the time I was very young to when computers first entered my life and the television was a constant noise in the background, to today, when I have multiple phones, screens, machinery, going at all times, always wanting to tell me something. There have been extremely rare moments, sometimes fleeting, when I haven't had at least some of it in my peripheral view. That's not entirely weird in the modern world, but I do marvel at it. I wonder if there was a different way I could have lived all this time. I was never really an outdoors kid in the standard sense. I definitely went for walks to go places when I was younger, but it was always in pursuit of a goal. There'd be a store, a friend's house, there'd be something I was pulled along with by family. But it wasn't me saying that I was going to set out randomly in a direction without any idea of where I was going to end up. I had purpose, I had drive, I had goals. So when my father first took me to work to show me the IBM 3279 terminals, these were perfect for me. All of the efforts that IBM had made so that data entry workers could use the machines for hours and days worked perfectly for a young kid who was fascinated at the machinery. It's hard to perceive now, but IBM equipment at the time was really miraculous in terms of how truly industrial yet human-formed it was. The smoothness of all of the surfaces, the unique textures that they used for keyboards and the sides of machines, it was a magical portal more than a terminal to me. These bright rooms they were in with linoleum floors and office chairs on wheels. This was my spaceship. It was on these machines that I first played Adventure. And if you don't know the magic trick of what Adventure is doing, it seems in every way like a program that is telling a story that will never end and which is changing itself based on what you're asking it. This magic trick shown to me before I was double digits in age, changed me utterly, forever. I loved the hum of machinery, the high-pitched whine of televisions, the sound of music coming out of radios, the spinning, the scratching of record players. When my father brought home computers for the kids to use, I was the one who hogged all the resources because it was a novelty to my siblings, but it was a lifeline to me. Through trauma and tragedy of divorce, computers and hardware and sounds were my refuge, my persistence in finding a foothold in this world. As I grew older, I got my very own machines, my very own technology. I got to use the expensive versions at school and the cheap versions at home, and it all seemed expansive, enveloping, a story that I could never finish listening to, and all it asked for was my undivided attention. Arcade machines, in their own way, were just another note in the symphony of sounds and machines. Their demands for quarters made them a different breed of friend, but I found ways to get my hands on just enough cash to make a good evening, to be able to play games into the night in these dark rooms with their beautiful decorations and neon wallpaper and floors. There was something special there, and I wanted it all, and I wanted it never to end. And so began this decades-long duet between me and these products, asking them to do everything for me in the world, and all they asked for was all of my time, all of my health, and all of my attention. But there were still moments in my life when I had to leave my friends behind, when I was visiting relatives who didn't have computers, or my family went to the lake house my father had bought for vacations. I was with family, I was with other people, but my machinery, my duet partners, my electronic friends were nowhere to be seen. And something happened to me in those situations. I was experiencing withdrawal and panic attacks and fear, facing a world where these dependable foundations weren't around. It kind of sounds strange talking about it, the idea that we would go to bed early at a relative's house and they would turn out the lights and I would realize that I was alone and I was facing the infinity of trying to fall asleep against nothing, against no noise except for myself and my own breathing and my own thinking. And how much that sent me into moments of introspection that, frankly, I hated. Because the conflicts in my family and the troubles and tribulations of becoming a teen and interacting with schools I didn't like and people I didn't want to spend time with just buried themselves deep inside me when I was using my fun toys, when I was playing with my absolutely incredible story machines. But bereft of all of that, all I could do was think, and I hated every moment of it. As I got older, I had defenses against any of that. Portable games, books, ubiquitous televisions, and computers wherever I went, to ensure all I had to do was flip a switch or turn to a keyboard, and I could get on with joining the chorus. By my 20s, I believe I've reached my peak with technology. I'm not aware of the tsunami of internet and World Wide Web yet. I don't know that phones are going to become computers in themselves. I just believe that between my modem, my home computers, my work computers, and everything in between, I'll never have the silence again. Naturally, you can't always avoid it, and I have memories in my 30s of having to have a radio underneath my pillow just to make sure I could fall asleep, just to listen to a talk radio station or an audiobook, making sure I never once had to hear myself. Maybe, once again, it was the heart attack at age 46 that changed my outlook on the world. Even though technology was right there, enabling me to tweet out what I thought my final tweet was, to sit and watch a monitor with my own heart on it as somebody operated on it, and of course, to have all sorts of monitoring machines afterwards, making noise, never ceasing, always watching me. I still started to realize that had I ended then, that had the duet fallen apart, I would have had a good life, but I'm not sure if I would have had a complete one. But whatever did break that spell, whatever did change my position, maybe it was simply facing oblivion down and realizing it wasn't as bad as I'd made it out to be, that I have found in the years hence a willingness, almost an acceptance, of bringing in the silence and the sound of my own thoughts. This podcast is a series of introspection, spoken into a machine, coming from long solitary journeys that I take thinking about the life I've lived, what things mean, what we're all here for, what I want to do. The result of that introspection, of that forced thinking, has been pretty good for me. This year, we took a vacation. We traveled to a different part of the state just to relax, not in pursuit of some convention or event or some job-related requirement, but simply to be in a different place, to take it easy. We chose a yurt on a farm that doesn't get any Wi-Fi signal, doesn't have any cell phone tower near it. It's completely dead. It's completely off the grid. No television, no radio, no anything. I had to face something that in my younger years would have been beyond reckoning. A week without machinery meant to feed myself back to myself. And I really, honestly enjoyed it. I twittered here and there. I definitely took pictures. But having so much of the time spent on that farm with no connection to the world and just myself and someone I cared about in wonderful delight. I want to be clear. The younger versions of me would find this a utter betrayal of everything I was, a foolish buying into the idea that a life without machinery is real life and that what we do online is completely fake. And that's not what I'm saying at all. I lived and continue to live a wonderful life with these tools and with this equipment. But it's no longer a lifesaver over a dark sea of fear and loss and silence. It's instead a delightful craft sailing on a sea of life's many mysteries and wonders, and one which I'm now free to dive into, swim around in, see all of the wonderful things inside, and then pull myself back on again, drying out in the sun and ready to dive in again whenever I feel like it. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bakoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Emilio Oliveira, Forrest Fuqua, Scott Roseanne, Scott McGrady, and Wayne Arthurton, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt.